And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you so much for joining today. And quite a busy day it will be indeed. I myself am on the road returning from Kansas City, but going to make a little pit stop in Red Wing, Minnesota. And for all of you who can read a map, you just said, well, that's not really a good idea, Bridget. You're going the wrong way. Well, I'll be spending tomorrow morning visiting and speaking before a Farm Bureau group, the Leadership Education Advocacy Program. And so this is a group of folks that work within Farm Bureau, and they are doing their best to help educate themselves and others about what's going on in agriculture. And I get the opportunity to visit with them, particularly about stress in farming, ranching, depression, and all else. And in studio today is our mascot, Cooper. He is all set to run the board, you might say, while Dean is out. He's going to be a helpful assistant to Addison. So thanks, Cooper, for stepping in at the desk. Much appreciated. And also later on in the show, I'll be joined by Don Kinsler. Don, of course, well known from NDSU Horticultural Sciences. Don is a great guest to have because he really doesn't even need me. I know for a fact Don can handle pretty much anything we needed all on his own. As we were getting ready to cue the intro, you probably heard the weather brought on by Dean, and that is indeed sponsored by Brian Bonesack of Equitable AgriFinance. He is providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing here to help farmers and ranchers. If you're interested, give Ryan a call, 701-261-659. Looking at the North Dakota Road Report, I see roads clear and not a problem for many areas. There's a couple of snow covered, etc. In fact, I'm experiencing some flurries right now in Minnesota. But overall, we are seeing pretty good road conditions. Today, we anticipate that will be a high of about 18. And some morning snow showers have been possible with a northwest breeze around 10 to 15. Tomorrow, we will start to see more snow. There's an 80% chance of snow. I've been hearing somewhere around that 2 to 3 inch potential after watching some forecasts last night. Looks to be early in the morning on Saturday that we'll see that snow moving into the Red River Valley and then heading further off into Minnesota. But I'm just trying to give you a little bit of a rundown. I'm way better as your ag director than I might be as your meteorologist. So for those who might be on the road and looking at any changing road conditions, you're welcome to give us a call at 701-293-9000 and share that insight if you have it. Today, you'll be able to also watch using YouTube and Facebook for our live streams and Acres TV. If you're unfamiliar with Acres TV, you are welcome to download that free app. It is what you could consider the Netflix of agriculture. If you are looking to watch farming videos from all aspects of ag, whether it's crop production, as well as some specialty businesses, and of course, livestock production, you can catch that on Acres TV. There is a variety of farmers there to show off what they do on an everyday basis and just help answer your questions, much like I get a chance to do very regularly. Also, it is National Milk Day. For those of you who remember the days of having milk delivered, man, that would have been probably one of the golden eras, if you will. But for those who don't know the history, National Milk Day, which happens on January 11th of every year, really came because farms were producing plenty of dairy milk and locals wanted to take advantage of that. They liked the idea of it being distributed right to their homes. The real turning point in getting milk to homes happened in 1878. That was the introduction of the glass milk bottle. It was a revolutionary innovation. What came next was pasteurization, so that keeping milk longer was very important because there was less chance of disease for people when they were drinking milk. And the changes began to happen in the 1930s. We now had pasteurization, we had home refrigeration, which was much more common, and the rise of supermarkets. People shopped differently. No longer did you have to have your deliveries from the local grocer or general store, and you could pick up everything all at once. So for those who remember having milk deliveries, I think it was, as I said, a golden time frame, but we can celebrate our National Milk Day today, January 11th. And I'm going to bring our guest, Don Kinsler, in just a little bit. Don, was there ever a time in your life where you got to have milk delivered right to your house.
Well, good afternoon. I wasn't alive in 1878 or whatever year that was.
No, not at all.
but anyway, I do remember the glass milk bottles. Yeah, the clink of those was kind of cool, actually. And they had kind of a, as I recall, a kind of a foil cap on. And if we collected enough of those foil caps, you got a free pass to the scenic movie theater in Lisbon, North Dakota. Now, a little side note, the Scenic Theater in Lisbon, North Dakota is the longest continual running movie theater in the United States. So I do remember those milk glass bottles.
I had no idea you could get a benefit like those, the pass to the movie theater, the way you're talking about, Don. And, you know, today it feels like we might give a lot of history lessons if we're already talking about when milk started to be delivered and the glass bottles came around. But I can tell you, I even had a milk delivery service up until just a couple of years ago in little old Hunter, North Dakota, and I appreciate it very much. I bet your mom did too.
Absolutely. My parents, for a while, did have a grocery store in Lisbon, North Dakota, Fairway Foods. And so then we actually then got our milk from the store that Mom and Dad had. So for a while, we did not have the home delivery. But yeah, you know, it's funny. As you mentioned that, I can still hear the clink of those glass milk bottles.
So, Don, interesting question. Well, let's bring this full circle to what you do today. Did your parents ever sell poinsettias at Christmas time or Easter lilies in their Fairway food store? Was that a part of their produce section or part of the display in the store?
They did. Not poinsettias so much, because actually poinsettias, you know, and we're going back kind of to the 1950s, 1960s. You know, poinsettias were kind of pretty much a greenhouse thing at the time. But my parents did, in their grocery store on Main Street in Lisbon, they did each spring sell bedding plants, some tomato plants, kind of out kind of on the sidewalk right in front of the store. And so, yes, absolutely. And I believe some Easter lilies as well. So many of those kind of full-service, small-town corner grocery stores, yes, did have a little something for everyone, including plants.
Well, did that help to spark any of your interest in what you became today, which is our regional expert all about plants and horticulture?
Well, as I always say, I don't like the word expert because, you know, we're just all in this together trying to grow things and get them to do well for us. But, you know, the thing that really sparked my interest is, as I enjoy saying, my mom took me out into the vegetable garden when I was about 4 or 5. I suppose to keep an eye on me. And I've never left. I just found it so fascinating how you can plant things. You can put seeds in the ground. Pretty soon they sprout and then produce all kinds of good things. You know, and the flowers, the beauty. And so, yes, I did grow up. So I always encourage moms and dads, if you have some kids that kind of seem to have a spark like that, even if you yourselves are not gardeners or aren't into it, but maybe, you know, foster that. You know, if you've kind of seems like some kids are enjoying growing things. Yes, provide some opportunities. Maybe it's raised gardens in the backyard. Maybe it's flowers in containers if you don't have a large enough yard for a flower bed. But yeah, because growing things, gardening, vegetables, flowers, trees, shrubs, landscaping, that can just be a lifetime of just total happiness. And so, yes, you know, sometimes you catch it because your mom's, dad's, grandma's, grandpa's. Actually, my grandfather passed away in his vegetable garden out in New Jersey. I mean, that sounds a little morbid, but what a way to go. And so yes.
I think it would be, actually. I think that's a perfect way if you've been enjoying gardening your whole life.
And then just all of a sudden pass away in your vegetable garden. Yes, I wouldn't mind that end myself, to be honest with you, but hopefully not for many more years.
Well, that's a really good point, Don. We need you for far too many questions and answers first. So today is really going to be about that. And Don and I have a few questions we want to cover. But for those who are listening, this is such a great time for you to visit with Don and ask questions that we could help you with. And one of the things that we certainly want to touch on is many of us have beautiful poinsettias left from Christmas and some of their care. We're going to need to visit about that. Maybe you haven't had a chance to, get rid of your Christmas tree yet. Oh, and I don't know about you, Don, but the garden seed catalogs have begun to show up at my house.
They are coming in the mailbox. I love it.
They really are. And I am so looking forward to visiting with you about making good choices in that garden catalog, because it feels really exciting to look at it now while it's cold. But we better be careful. So stay tuned, folks. Let's get the markets from the American Ag Network. And when we come back, my excellent co-host today, Don Kinsler, and I are going to talk all about gardening. We'll be back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, where today we're really going to focus on getting ready for wrapping up the winter plant season, moving forward into the summer garden season. And I'm very excited that I not only have my co-host sitting in at the desk today, Cooper, the Wonder Mini Highlander, and Don Kinsler from North Dakota State University Extension Service. And Don, I managed to, many years, keep a couple of poinsettias post-Christmas. I'm probably doing it a terrible disservice because I never give it a dark period. Can you just tell me, which to literally shed some light on, why should I, or what difference would it make for me if I did that with my poinsettias?
Well, you know, it is a fun project to keep a poinsettia going all year long and get it to bloom again the next Christmas. You know, and I always suggest to people who enjoy houseplants or growing things to try it at least once. You know, it's not all about getting a poinsettia on the cheap next year. It's just, it's a fun process, and it's fun to just observe them. So if we start right now, with the poinsettia that we probably bought, you know, around Thanksgiving or so. Okay, many of us, when we buy a new poinsettia, put it on maybe a coffee table, you know, somewhere in the corner of the room, you know, decorative. And what they need to do now is those poinsettias need to be moved to a sunny window. You know, they're tropical in nature, lots of full all-day sunshine. So give it the sunniest window you can possibly have. And water it as you would other houseplants, you know, when it's dry, you know, stick a finger down in. If you feel, you know, up to the first joint, if you feel some moisture at the fingertip, it's fine. If it's dry at the fingertip, you know, give it a good thorough watering. So water it as you would your other houseplants, full sun. And then in the springtime, May, you know, after danger of frost is gone, then move that poinsettia plant outdoors, maybe where you've got other container plants where you're watering regularly, but it really likes that summer vacation. Maybe trim it back a little if it's gotten a little spindly over winter. Trim it back a little. It'll get nice new growth. Fertilize it every couple of weeks with a water-soluble type, and it will put out nice, generous growth. And you maybe even could repot it. That would be a good time. Oftentimes they're sold in a 6-inch plastic type pot. Maybe bump it up to an 8-inch diameter pot. Give it a little more space and fresh soil also. And during the summertime, it will put out nice, wonderful, lush growth. It'll get bigger than your original plant was. Continue to fertilize it. And then bringing up the point that you mentioned, Bridget, and that is the trigger for a poinsettia plant to color up, you know, all summer long, it's going to have nice green leaves. The trigger for that to color up is short days, long dark periods, short daylight, long dark nights, which they get in their native habitat. But, of course, in our homes, we have electric lights on at night. The plant thinks it's a long day and it's not going to color up. So beginning the end of September or by October 1st, that plant needs to have a long, dark night each night, starting October 1st. And so how do we get that, a long, dark night without daylight or without light of a room? Okay, some people will stick a box over it, beginning about 5 each afternoon. When you get home from work, stick a box over it. Or a big black garbage bag. Some people will stick it in a dark closet, as long as you don't open that closet during the night and give it some light. So each day, beginning October 1st or so, each towards evening, you need to cover up the plant, uncover it the next day in the morning. So you have these long, dark nights, and that will trigger that coloring up. If you don't give it that, it will probably not color up and would just remain green. So, Bridget, where were you at? So you got one through the summer and into the winter. How has your success been?
You know, first of all, quality of where those plants come from really matters, because there's a couple places in town that I've gotten some beautiful poinsettias. as long as you mentioned, I take care to water them consistently. They don't necessarily like wet feet. And then as soon as the summer warms up, because I haven't been putting them in dark, but as we get into spring and we get summer, I have an enclosed covered porch that faces the south. And if I get it in there right up against the screen and it gets direct sun with lots of warmth, you're exactly right. That tropical lush plant comes right back and it will redden up over the summer months. It seems to get a bit spindly and not as awesome as I get to about August, September. So perhaps I would have to start covering it or doing something differently. But you're right. That plant really likes those more tropical conditions that I try to give it.
They sure do. And so it is a fun, kind of a fun experiment. I don't do it every year, but every few years I will overwinter, oversummer one and coax it back into bloom for Christmas again. And so it is. It's a fun project.
You know, it really is. And one thing that you mentioned, Don, that I really want to go back to, you mentioned watering and doing it accurately. I may have a heavy hand when it comes to watering. Is there something that I could do better? Rather than just knowing in my head every Thursday I must water the plants, is there a device? Is there something I should be putting in the pot that gives me a better representation of whether my plant really needs that water? And does that vary by the time of the year?
There is the best device possible for telling if a plant, including poinsettia, needs watering, and that is the human finger. That is hard to beat. You know, you can use moisture meters, but you need to kind of set those for certain plants. But the human finger, and what works very, very well, is insert your finger, pointer finger, up to the first joint. And into the potting mix there, up to the first joint. And if you feel moisture at the fingertip, most plants are fine with that moisture. They got moisture in the roots. Don't water them, especially plants like poinsettia, which do like to dry out quite thoroughly. But if at that fingertip, if you don't feel any moisture, then go ahead and water it thoroughly, meaning you apply enough water so that the entire soil ball becomes moistened and a little bit comes out the bottom. Now, that's a good point, too, with poinsettias. Usually they come in a foil wrapper. Cut a hole in the bottom of that. My wife, Mary, was a florist by trade, and they always told their customers, now, when you get this home, make sure you cut a little hole in the bottom of that foil so that water will drain away. Otherwise, they quickly become waterlogged and develop root rot. So I'm a big fan of just using the human finger to check out houseplants. Moisture meters are very valuable, too. They can give you a good indication, and there's usually some settings that you can look at to see whether, you know, a plant likes a little more moist. But overwatering is the most common killer of potted plants, especially indoors.
And I'm not surprised at that. I could be accused of it myself.
And so poinsettias are a kind of a tropical, almost a succulent type plant. If you've ever taken off one of the leaves of a poinsettia, you notice the milky sap that exudes. And that milky sap helps to retain moisture within that plant. And so they like to dry out quite thoroughly, you know, not to the wilting point, but they like to dry out quite thoroughly in between. Now, this would be a good time, too, when I mentioned the sap, to debunk the myth that poinsettias are poisonous. Now, up until the 1970s, they were considered, even by the Food and Drug Administration, they were considered poisonous, and they were putting out information, you know, keep poinsettias away from pets, kids. This was all based on the early 1900s in Hawaii. A 2-year-old child died after eating a poinsettia leaf. The child did die, but it was not related to eating the poinsettia leaf. But that was enough to trigger this, poinsettias are toxic, poisonous. Well, anyway, in the 1970s, Ohio State University actually decided, let's do research on this. And so they fed rats, generous amounts of poinsettia leaves over a, you know, number of year period, you know, what scientists do. And there was an effect on the rats. They gained weight. And so it debunked the myth that poinsettias are poisonous. Now, they do have that kind of latexy type sap inside. So for people that are maybe a bit allergic to that, that can cause a little bit of skin irritation. And if pets were to nibble or chew on the leaves, it might cause vomiting, might cause mouth irritation, but there have been no pets, humans, no one has died from eating poinsettias.
You know what, Don? I heard you say the poinsettias are not poisonous, but it sounds like they're fairly fattening. So we should probably not do that.
But now, we might also mention that, okay, just because they're not deadly poisonous does not mean we make salad out of them. They're not to be consumed. And if you have pets, children that want to eat leaves, maybe keep it away from them.
Okay, that's pretty good advice about your menu planning. And when we return, we've got lots more questions to go through. And we are certainly welcome to those that any of you might want to send. You can reach us at 701-293-9000. I'll be back with Dunn Kinsler. Let's talk about all those garden catalogs landing in your mailbox. Mine is getting full, too. Be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And, once upon a time, the good Lord needed a caretaker for this paradise, so he made a farmer. One of those who answered the call is Nate Thorsrud, owner and farmer on a family farm near Grandin. But Nate also has insurance roots in North Dakota fields with experience since 2004. Brings you insurance that feels family-like and trustworthy. He's not going to sell you insurance you don't need, and he will definitely make it convenient for you and come directly to you to do business. So, when bad weather hits, JLA Insurance is there to protect those who tend the land. Give Nate a call at 701-371-0311. My guest today, I feel like I have two. I have Cooper, our Highlander cow, holding down the fort for me in studio. He's even wearing my headset. And then I have the ever gentlemanly Don Kinsler, who's so kindly in the studio today while I'm on the road. Don, I wanted to visit with you, and the thing that triggered the idea with me was when the garden catalog started arriving on a New Year's Eve. Do you start picking your seed now, or do you like to wait a little while?
Oh, I like to start picking it right now. Yes, and the seed catalogs are coming, and it's fun visiting the mailbox, pulling out the seed catalog. And, now a lot of these seed catalogs are available, of course, online, but once you get kind of on the mailing list, then it's fun to actually get the catalog. Browsing through them with a cup of coffee, that is good living. Now, I do like to order the seeds early. Because those seeds at the seed companies, they're already packaged and everything. They're ready to go. So delaying doesn't mean you're going to get fresher seed. So the danger of waiting too long is that some of the popular varieties might sell out. So I like to order early. Now, at the seed companies, those seed packets are kept in excellent storage, refrigerated storage. But when I order early, and I've already gotten some of the seed packs mailed to me, what we can do to keep them in good health, the seeds in good health so they don't deteriorate, is instead of keeping them at room temperature, put them in a sealed jar, just a glass jar with a lid, or even a Ziploc plastic bag, and put in the refrigerator. Those will keep very, very well until you're ready to use them. So I like to order early while the selection is good.
Now, much like yourself, Don, I get a variety of catalogs, and we all have our favorites. One that's very popular here in the Midwest, of course, is Gurney's. They are a long-time family favorite for so many. But I want to know, when it comes to making some of that seed selection, I will peruse, and I'm going to use cauliflower as my example, and I see them say, oh, this is Gurney's best. This is the one you should order. But then I've debated, but maybe it's not the best for me. How do I choose? What are some of the criteria I should maybe be using versus just watching the emotional advertising that goes with it?
Well, and it's interesting. You mentioned Gurney's, and I can't resist but talking about rhubarb plants that my grandmother ordered from Gurney's in the 1930s. And I still have those rhubarb plants. It's a wonderful red variety.
Wow.
My grandmother had them on the farm out by Alice. And then my mom dug a division, took it down to our home in Lisbon. And then I took a division from Lisbon, brought it up to our home in Fargo. And so, still going strong with those. So now a number of different seed catalogs, seed companies. And of course, yes, they all seem to say they've got something new, something improved. How do you know if it actually does well, like you say, Bridget, for us? Well, there is a good way. NDSU Extension horticulturist Tom Kelb, who is located in Bismarck, each year he sends out trial seed types to gardeners. In fact, you can sign up to be one of his trial garden things, and he sends you a couple of varieties to test. So you can just do a quick check online, NDSU of variety trials, garden variety trials. It'll come up. But anyway, each year then, that is boiled down to the best recommendations that have performed well for actual home gardeners in our upper Midwest area. And so to access that, and the 2025 one is online already, so you just simply search for NDSU North Dakota Vegetable Cultivars 2025. That sounds kind of long, but NDSU Vegetable Garden Cultivars 2025, and it'll pop up for you. And anyway, that tells all of the recommended varieties that have actually performed well for regional gardeners.
Now, when I look at those lists, that's tremendous for me, knowing what really fits my neighborhood. There's been a slight change in the zones, what we all used to look at on that zone map, and there were some shifts in there in the last couple of years, so that familiarity probably isn't as good as it once was. I do think you're right about using Tom Kelb's system to find what some of the best. And all right, I've ordered some seed. I have it in my jar in the refrigerator, or maybe I'm out in the garage that's heated but cooler than the house. And Don, when should I start thinking about planting them? Because sometimes we get pretty joyous about getting seeds started out in our greenhouses, our porches, our garages, and then it takes a lot of time for spring to come. Any advice?
It does. And my own greenhouse is actually our basement. We have an unfinished old basement, and we have lights there. So my plant lights are shop-type lights, you know, kind of the long, 8-foot long lights. I've got about 5 of those over tables, kind of like greenhouse benches. And that's where my greenhouse is, in our basement. A few years ago, I switched from fluorescent tubes to LEDs. Now, they don't have to be special plant lights. They can be, but just a combination of kind of a cool white, warm white. LED lights work very, very well. So the long horizontal shop type lights work beautifully. Now, they need to be kept within a couple inches of the plants that you're growing under them. So now maybe it's a furnace room, a kind of a utility room. So most of us maybe have somewhere in the basement that you can grow things, or upstairs, rather than the round bulb types that just kind of target single plants. The reason I like the long horizontal shop type lights is you can get trays of plants under those. Okay. So anyway, yes, the temptation oftentimes is to start things too early. Now, tomatoes are one of the most popular things that home gardeners like to start themselves. Maybe cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, they're all pretty easy to start. Peppers also. The danger is starting them too early. You know, we might think that, well, gosh, if I start them nice and early, I'm going to have extra large tomato plants to set outside come May. But the danger,
absolutely,
the danger of that is that they might get too large and just languish indoors. So there's kind of an optimal time to start each of these different seed types, and some things require a longer growing time indoors or in a greenhouse than others. So for tomatoes, which is one of the most popular to start, the target date to start tomato seeds indoors is April 1st. Now, that may seem a little late, but no, it's not. April 1st works very, very well. For example, our community gardens that produces their own plants, April 1st is their target date for starting all of those. And so start them on a heat mat. They'll germinate well. You'll get good, healthy, vigorous plants that'll be just perfect for setting out, transplanting out into the garden sometime the middle to the end of May. Now, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, I take a little longer. They could be started about March 15th. Now, I am this afternoon, I'm going to take a little bit of time off. I'm actually going to start some seeds this afternoon under our lights. But what I'm going to start are begonias and coleus, the flowers, because they take a long time to grow. They come up just tiny, tiny little seedlings, and they take quite a few months to develop into a plant by May. So if you get my drift, that some things can be started now, but not too many things. But starting about March 15th, then we can start getting our vegetables growing. Peppers about March 15th, but tomatoes wait until April 1st.
You know, Don, you make a really great distinction right there. All vegetables and flowers are not alike. And I didn't even think about that. Some of those very longer season things, like you mentioned, the beautiful begonias that everyone wants outside and looking full and lush, as well as those coleuses, they really do need that jump start. The begonia that I brought in from outside this summer, the one that you said, well, they're not really great at surviving the winter. So far, so good.
I'll have to
send you pictures. He doesn't exactly look like a real winner, but he's holding in there.
That's great. I also enjoy growing petunias from seed, our own petunias from seed. Those we start about March 1st. Now, starting our own plants from seed ourselves, it's not all about getting plants on the cheap. We don't want to adversely affect our locally owned garden centers. But if I start some of my own plants in our basement, I can go to the garden center and I can buy more trees, shrubs, other things that I can't start in my basement, or other vegetables. For example, cherry tomatoes. We only need one cherry tomato plant. I like the variety called Sun Sugar. It produces hundreds of tomatoes. That could feed a family of 20. You know, I don't need multiple plants. I just need one. So it doesn't pay for me to buy a whole pack of seeds. I just go to the local greenhouse and buy one plant. So you see what I mean? We aren't trying to cut out the greenhouses, the garden centers. We're just saving a little money here so we can spend it there.
Now, when it comes to that seed, generally comes quite clean, especially when we're buying from these reputable seed companies to get started. Do you ever get concerned that when you're picking up bedding plants that there could be a pathogen that comes along with them in those little soil cubes that are the little bedding packets that could adversely affect your garden?
Yes, absolutely. There can be pathogens. There can be viruses. There can be fungal-type diseases. And that's why I'm a big advocate of the locally owned garden centers that have been in place for years, because their businesses thrive by doing the right thing. So I'm a big proponent of the locally owned garden centers. And you mentioned the importance of healthy seed. Now, that's especially important, I believe, with seed potatoes. And, of course, that's an interesting term, seed potatoes. They aren't actually seed. They're potato pieces that you plant. And the importance of certified seed potatoes, because many of the potato diseases can be transmitted through the piece that you plant. For example, I enjoy growing potatoes. So right now in our root cellar, we've got potatoes stored, and you know, we probably won't use them all by spring. So a temptation might be to use some of your old potatoes to plant out into the garden. Well, those potatoes maybe carry some diseases, and those diseases would be transmitted to the new crop through that affected piece. Whereas certified seed potatoes, and they'll be labeled as such, those have been certified to be free of diseases. And so I always start with fresh, good seed because, you know, our growing season is valuable. I don't want to waste a growing season producing potatoes that are going to end up with a bunch of blight and tuber type diseases. Yeah, so the importance of certified seed potatoes.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. There's only so many days in this growing season. I want to use each one of them. And my last question for you, Don, I'm going to circle back to where we were talking about watering. And this comes to mind. Do plants differ seasonally for their watering requirements? And I think specifically about house plants like a ficus or a philodendron. Are there times of the year where they need more water because it's more sunshine, maybe because we're running the air conditioners, or is it the opposite? They need more water in the winter because of our home heating systems.
You know, that's an interesting comment, because plants are actually very, very smart. There are a couple of things that trigger their watering needs. Of course, one is day length. You know, in these short days of wintertime, when there's not much sun coming through maybe a window, or what sun does come in is low on the horizon, quite weak, oftentimes that will trigger less growth in the wintertime and less water needs because there's less growth. But the other factor on that is we've got heated air blowing around. We've got the furnaces running. So that could cause a drier air, drier atmosphere in the home. And so our own house plants dry out more in the wintertime. I have to check them. And I always say check. I don't water on a schedule. I check them on a schedule to see if they need watering. My schedule, I check on Wednesdays and on Sundays. So in the winter, in our own situation, our house plants need watering more often. In the spring, as we get towards summer, the air conditioner kicks in. Even though the days are longer and the plants tend to start growing more, the house plants, they oftentimes will need less water. It's maybe a little more humid indoors. And so I always check the plants on a schedule, you know, with my finger, my moisture meter finger, and then water accordingly. So that's a good idea. It's fascinating to observe the rhythm of plants, both indoors and outdoors. The response to the day length, the responses to temperature and humidity. Plants are really fascinating, aren't they, Bridget?
As someone who's been an agronomist, but then also the things that I love to do as far as gardening and houseplants, they are absolutely fascinating. But you make them even more so, Don, and you do a wonderful job of answering our questions and explaining with your wealth of knowledge. Thanks for coming in today. And
it's a pleasure to be here.
In the studio.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Addison even said in my ear, Don, you know, we usually get a plethora of phone calls when Don is on. And I said, well, we're either wildly entertaining or horribly boring. I don't know which one, but Don and I had a good time. So
always right, a great time to be here.
Thank you so much, sir. And we will be back. I will make sure to give a check of the weather and touch on some headlines before the end of the hour. So stay tuned. And thank you for joining us. Glad to hear you've been here this afternoon for Weather and Ag in Focus. A little touch on the weather for you. Today looks like we're going to top out at about 18 degrees with an overnight low of 10 tomorrow morning. We are going to see a bit more snowfall coming down, a couple of inches likely, moving on into west central Minnesota after that. Sunday brings the wind and cooler temperatures with an overnight low on Sunday of minus 10. We're going to have overnight lows of minus degrees for the next three nights, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and we'll start to see a little sunshine early on next week. But a little cold air returns after we've had this clipper move through, and we will do our best to get through that, because here we are plowing through January awfully quickly, and we still have had a pretty decent winter overall. Public service announcements, you might say. Well, Lake Region State College has a new agriculture degree. Previously, they really focused on precision ag, which was doing more with less and being able to maximize output while minimizing input. But really, everything that happens in farming is now precise and precision. And so Lake Region State College in Devil's Lake has made some changes. Their program is designed to provide a generalist knowledge about many topics in agriculture, such as farming or ranching with agronomy, machinery, animal science, finance, data analysis, and some fundamental skills like public speaking and better writing. You know, to be honest with you, as we farm and work in our small communities, those skills are tremendous. Maybe you're acting on behalf of a school board. Perhaps you are on your church council or representing on a grower association. Those are great opportunities for you to use those skills that you pick up with this degree. Also, currently, Lake Region State College is sharing their Hofstede Ag building with the Devil's Lake High School Ag classes, while the high school is building their own building as well. It's going to bring in new Ag classes as well as an addition of an FFA chapter, which has been stagnant for a number of years. So Ag is on the rise in the Devil's Lake region. St. Cloud is going to see an expansion of $3.9 million to Gieringhof. Gieringhof is a manufacturer that first began in Germany. And now they have expanded here to the U.S. And Gieringhof has innovations that include a first single-row harvester, the first multi-row header for self-propelled harvesting, residue chopping headers, and the first folding header. We're very familiar with Gieringhof when it comes to talking about corn heads, and this new expansion will certainly give them more room to build and provide for the market. Thanks again for being here today. Much enjoyed having you as well as Don Kinsler join me for the afternoon. Don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas coming up next. Who knows what Jay may talk about, but I bet it'll catch your attention. Have a great afternoon.